Thank you for tuning into the VF1 show with VF and Vincenzo, the podcast that discusses all things business, marketing, politics, and government within the world of Formula One. If that's your thing, then you found the right place. So without further ado, it's lights out and away we go.
Welcome back to the show. This is Vincenzo. This is the VF1 show. And we are both absolutely, I don't know if devastated is the right word, but angry, a little sad after the race at Circuit of the Americas. And we're going to talk about it on this episode of the podcast. First, let me say hi to my co-host, Vanessa VF. How you doing?
Hola. Yeah, I'm good. I'm happy. I'm kind of happy that F1 has departed Austin, or is about to depart Austin.
It was you're right there.
My God, yeah. You can't drive anywhere. My God, they need to figure that out. That's annoying.
Yeah, I've been to Austin many times. I've been to Circuit of the Americas for the race. But not as a native Austonian or Austinian. What's the vibe like for you guys down there when it's popping off?
So it's interesting because we also have a college football team, the Texas Longhorns. And so they're obviously in season around this time. You've got basketball kind of heating up or other sports mm-hmm. heating up right now. And so it's just a very lively place to be. And then on top of it, we've got two back-to-back weekends of ACL, which is a music festival for those outside of the US.
Right.
And then
there's
a week break, and then there's the race. And then they kind of start to set Zilker Park up for Thanksgiving, for Christmas, which they have this huge festival of lights thing going on for like a month and a half. So it's a lot, especially in the downtown area where it wasn't designed to handle as much traffic as it's having to handle. And when you've got a race that's welcoming hundreds of thousands of people, I mean, it's fantastic for tourism, but it's just, you can't get anywhere. So I'm curious to see if the sport continues to grow, especially in Austin. I mean, their hotels are popping up left and right. High rises are popping up left and right. People want to live here. So eventually, you know, they're starting to eliminate some parking garages, private parking that people own. They're selling to developers to build these massive high rises. So parking is very limited in downtown. So I'm curious to find out how they're going to fix all that in the future, because it's not like COTA is next door. You know, COTA is kind of a ways away from, you got to head far away mm-hmm. from the downtown area. So I don't know. It's very congested. It's also very hot still. So you're dealing with all of the annoyances. So
yeah.
I don't know. It's like, again, as a local, I love what it does to the economy. I love having everyone here. It's super fun. But at the same time, when like everyone packs up and leaves, knowing that we've had pretty much a whole month of like nonstop tourism, we're ready to breathe. We're ready to just have a moment.
I can't imagine having that in my backyard.
It's a lot.
So kudos to you.
I mean, part of me kind of wishes that they would create a complex at COTA with hotels and just kind of different structures, kind of like Silverstone in a way, that could house more people on that side of Austin.
They
could take shuttles into the city for, you know, going to restaurants and clubs and parties and things like that. I think that would help eliminate a lot of that congestion.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's kind of crazy. Everybody is coming back into the downtown area to even just to stay. And yeah. I forgot the name of it, but last year I was on like the opposite side of the city. So not even in downtown, I was yet another, you know, 15 minutes, 20 minutes on the other side, which is fine. It's not like it's the worst thing in the world. But it does get, I can see how like there could be frustration from people that live there, where it's like, all right, you guys are not only hogging up this one part of the city, you are also hogging up every single part of our city.
Well, for some color here, people in Texas, if you meet someone, you'll straight up ask them, so what part of Austin do you live in? And if you're out by the lake and somebody lives up north, you're like, yeah, I'm never going to go visit you. It's just too much traffic. And so I wish I was joking. I'm not. People literally will not go visit their friends or family depending on like what, like how far away they have to drive just because traffic's already a joke. So,
oh geez, that's funny.
Yeah. So don't take that personally. Like the how far away you are, because like us, like people who live here are the exact same way. Like we won't travel any farther than we absolutely have to. We'll tell people, okay, meet me in the middle. I'm not going out there. So it's a lot of traffic here, but you know what? We're fine. Everything's fine. We appreciate the tourism. We appreciate everyone who comes out here and loves our city as much as we do. But again, as somebody who's gone to races at COTA before this massive rapid expansion, I do kind of have some nostalgia for the olden days. I tweeted the other day that I remember before all this happened, you could literally drive up to the track an hour before quali, an hour before the race, you'd be able to find a parking spot and then get in and watch it and find a good, you know, GA position to watch it from, and you'd be fine. And now it's like you have to get there at like 6 a.m. and you're probably not going to leave until, I don't know, 9 or 10 at night. So yeah, kind of nostalgic for the olden days, but it's fine.
Well, unfortunately, I think where we're going with it is, you know, bigger.
Yeah.
Bigger, more hectic, more crazy. Anyway, so it,
I'll be reporting back next month from Las Vegas for sure.
Yeah, that'll be interesting. Yeah. That'll be interesting to see how that pans out. I'm curious. I mean, I don't foresee that I'm going to I'm not going as of right now, and I don't think I'm going to go. So it'll be interesting to hear the on the ground. I know that I've actually talked to people that are going to Vegas like after the race and that are like kind of pissed just because they've already been told by their hotels that like their experience might be a little messed up because of takedown from the F1 race. I was like, damn, that's kind of wild.
Well, think about it. They have been constructing some of these facilities now for the past couple of weeks. And, you know, if it takes you a whole month or like maybe 6-7 weeks just to set everything up,
yeah,
it's probably going to go well into December, the breakdown of everything. So that's got to be annoying for people who live there. They need to streamline that. I can't see how that's sustainable long-term, because that's basically saying during, you know, when it starts to cool down in Vegas and more families like to go there and like to go to shows and things, it's basically saying, hi, we're going to kind of cut into your experience for a couple of months and you're just going to have to deal with it. And then on top of that, you have so many hotel staffers that are going to be working, you know, mm-hmm. morning, noon, and night during the week of Formula One. So they're probably going to want to take some time off after the race to recover. And so it's like, if you are staying there for any other reason past the race, are you going to get a watered down actual customer service experience? So a lot of logistical things for Vegas to think about. But obviously we know with anything, the first iteration of something is always going to be the worst. So unfortunately, there's going to be all eyes from around the world on Las Vegas. And, you know, as it is right now, I've heard that hotels have gone down up to 60% since it was announced last year, the hotel rates. So the fact that they're still not able to sell out all the tickets, they're still not able to sell out all the hotels, I think it's got to be a wake-up call right now that it's too expensive for people.
Yeah, I wonder. I don't know. I wonder if that's the case or if that's just, you know, like that's just what happens, you know, after you, like, as you get closer, you know, like you get closer to anything, any type of event, a date, things just start to get cheaper. So I just wonder if it's just being reported on that way. I mean, I haven't dug into it either, so I couldn't speak specifically, but historically with anything, you know, prices go down as you get closer to an event, they're trying to fill it up. And
but a lot of the tickets are resell tickets, though. Like people went in there, they bought a shit ton of tickets, and now they're trying to resell them, and they're unable to. Like people just aren't buying.
Yeah, and that's also, you know, you've got to think that, and this is with many things, right? But you don't have, it's not an event where you're just like, okay, I can buy my hotel and I'm going to buy my ticket to the event and I'm done. It's like, you have to have your ticket to the event. You have to have your hotel. You have to have your transportation. You have to figure out you don't really have to figure out how to get around because it's Vegas. So it's all right there, but you've got to make plans for, you know, where you're going to eat, all that kind of stuff. So I do think that even if it wasn't the cost, let's just say cost was wiped away and, you know, okay, we don't have to worry about cost because I got cheap tickets. There's so much other stuff that prices aren't necessarily coming down, you know, flights, those aren't going to just magically drop, especially with a high traffic area for that weekend. And it's getting close to the holidays, like travel's not going to be cheaper. So that's going to be expensive.
Also interesting. When I was booking my flight, Dallas first class, or not Dallas, Delta first class was, I think it priced at like $3,000.
Wow.
And I'm like,
and that's a short flight for you.
Are you serious?
It's not that long.
Just for the hell of it, I priced what a single flight would be, like a one-way flight from Vegas to Austin would be first class. And it was like, I think it was like $500 or $600. So I'm like,
go the opposite direction?
Yeah. After the race. And I'm like, okay, so you're spending a premium to fly there. But I'm like, I bought 2 first class tickets to Boston for my graduation trip from Austin, Boston. And it was like $1,900.
Yeah.
It's a hell of a lot farther. So I just, all of this stuff, I get it. It's capitalism in motion. It's doing what it's supposed to do. But Jesus, if it's at the cost where it's going to act as a deterrent for people not to go someplace, then I don't know. They've got to figure that out.
Yeah. Well, I don't know what the answer is, and I don't want to necessarily talk too much, too much speculation on it, because it can, it can go either way. Right.
Yeah.
It could get to be the most viewed, the most watched event. I don't know. I was telling some of my family members about it, cause we were watching football this weekend, and I said, well, let's watch the race. I want to watch the race. So we turned on and they were like, that's still going on. They're like, I thought it was over. Didn't he already win? And I said, yeah, but you know, they still have to finish the rest of the season. They're like, that's dumb. And that was it. Like that was the response I got. And I was just like, I'm not going to try to explain it. I was like, oh, okay. Don't they still have to race in Vegas? And I said, yeah. Well, what's the point? Why are people going to go? Well, what time is that race at? And I was like, well, it's going to be on at like 1 o'clock at night, our time. And like, I'm definitely not watching it. I was like, oh my God, I know.
Yeah.
I get it.
Well, I mean, that could kind of help us segue onto what we actually wanted to talk about, which was the result of the US Grand Prix. Because we talk about all the down races, the down battles, where you've got Sergio Perez and Lewis Hamilton still competing for second place in the drivers. Mm. But this race changed a lot of that. Now there's a 39-point differential. There was a 20-something point differential prior to this race. Lewis would have been that gap could potentially have been completely closed by Brazil. And now because of this disqualification from Lewis, now that's just kind of opened it up significantly more. I mean, he would have to get on the podium every single race and make sure that Sergio was either off the podium or like down into the lower points for him to get P2.
Right.
So it's frustrating watching all that happen, knowing that Mercedes just kind of got their car dialed in. They had the best race they've had all season. And then to see this happen, it's like, it's frustrating. And I get it. People want to watch the down battles. People want to know who's going to get second in the constructor, second in the drivers, all that stuff. But at what expense? Because at what point are you starting to sacrifice your fan investment into the sport where they just say, I don't even care anymore?
Yeah. And I get what you're saying. And for just as a quick recap for those who just maybe didn't know or haven't paid attention, but Lewis Hamilton finished second in the race. He and Charles Leclerc finished fifth, or was it sixth? Whatever it was, doesn't matter. It wasn't a winning position. both of them then were summoned by this, or not summoned, but they were their cars underwent checks, like almost every car does, for something. Their cars were checked for the skid plate underneath, which is a it's a glass filled resin plate with titanium fasteners. Essentially, it's why you see the car spark at certain times, because of these titanium fasteners that are keeping this plate done attached. The wear on their planks or their titanium fasteners were more than the allowed limit, meaning that they were either set up, you know, too low or whatever, something happened, right? So most likely they were set up too low. Their cars were set up too low, and that can give a car a massive advantage during the course of a race. They were then disqualified. It's a pretty cut and dry penalty. You know, you measure it, it falls outside of the threshold, you're done. So they were both disqualified. And, you know, again, to your point, V, with those disqualifications, the implications are mainly on the constructors. For Lewis's case, it's also it's something that's going to hurt his chances at P2 for the season. Actually, I'll be honest with you, the disqualification, even though Charles Leclerc also got disqualified, the disqualification actually helped Ferrari. So if you look at where they finished, Lewis finished second, Charles finished fifth, and then Sainz finished fourth, and Russell was somewhere lower. But now that it was just Sainz and Russell that were qualified or classified, Sainz finished, you know, with much more points than Russell, and that helps Ferrari in the constructors. So it actually was a double whammy on Mercedes, even though it was also sucked for Ferrari. With all that said, I will add that the minute the news came out that they were going to check the plates, that's the first thing I said to who I was watching with. I was like, yep, that's done. Like, and it's not even, you know, for me, it wasn't even a, you know, I hate the FIA kind of thing. It was like, well, that's the penalty. Other people feel differently, and it sounds like you might feel a little bit differently. I'm curious as to what you may think. Like, if this was a regular situation where maybe, I don't know what a regular situation would be. Let's just say this was earlier in the year. Not that it matters, but let's just say it was. Would you have been okay with a penalty?
This might be a two-part answer. I think I would have been okay with a penalty just because the car that Mercedes debuted with sucked. So if they got it that far into P2 in a race and they were actually closing the gap to a second between Max on the final lap, I would have been like, hell yeah. Okay. That sucks. But at least we have a good baseline to work with. This far in the season where they've already done all the things. Yeah. I'm like F you. why? But also, you know, and we talked about sprint races and what those sprint weekends, the implications that they could have on the actual race itself. We talk about the cars potentially sustaining significant damage. I mean, you're asking them to race two races in one weekend. That's a lot of wear and tear on a car. But if they're going to ask you to do that, but they're not going to give you, an oh shit budget in case something does happen to a car in a sprint race, then you're having to work essentially spend the money on two races in one weekend. And that's not fair either. But with that said, when you're also limiting the amount of time that they have to put their cars back together and extract the data from like one practice session, essentially, then you're, and then you have to go do two races on top of that. That's sure. a lot of work that you're asking these teams to do with a very little amount of data. And a lot of teams, they'll bring whole new packages to the Circuit of the Americas track because it takes in so many different great elements from so many other tracks. So they think, okay, well, if this works on COTA, this will work on this other track. So that's yeah. why a lot of teams bring their upgrades packages to Circuit of the Americas. It makes perfect sense. But when they have limited data to work with and to set up the actual cars themselves, I mean, it's kind of like the FIA is shooting itself in the foot right there. They need to give teams more time with their cars if they're going to saddle them with an additional race.
Yeah.
So, I mean, yeah, that seems like the fair reaction to this.
Yeah, I mean, here's the other thing that the reason why I don't say it doesn't bother me, but the reason why I'm not going to say anything about it is I also think that, you know, other teams seem to be fine. Red Bull, for example, they just ran a higher car. They ran, it was clearly higher. They were running a higher, floor than everybody else. Now, one can say, well, they've already got the championships locked up. There's less, like, it doesn't matter. Okay, fine. But like, they're still there to win. They're not trying to like just finish fifth in a race or anything. Like, they're clearly trying to win. Max is driving his arse off. I mean, he's sitting there screaming, don't yell, don't talk to me while I'm
making turns,
while I'm braking. I mean, he wants to win, right? So it's not like we're all of a sudden Red Bull doesn't care. But they just ran a higher, ride height. And I don't know, like, I don't know if all the teams didn't think of it or whatnot. Obviously they only tested a small portion of cars. 50% of that sample size failed. Okay. So does that mean they should have tested more? Maybe.
I think it is
what it is, right?
Yeah. I think though that if you're going to randomly scrutinize, what is it, four cars? And 50% of those cars have the same issue from two different teams. I mean, it would be like, okay, we get it if it's one team. If it was both Ferraris or both Mercedes, you're like, yeah, mm-hmm. okay, you guys try getting clever. But the fact that it's two opposing teams, I think if I was the FIA, I would have said, okay, we need to scrutinize maybe one or two more cars to get a better sample. Because if this is actually caused by the track, if this is actually caused by the inability of teams to extract enough data to understand the cars, with their upgrades packages, then maybe we need this data to, maybe it won't change the results. Maybe they're both still going to be disqualified, but at least it gives us additional data and how we need to respond to these races in the future.
Listen, I'm not totally opposed to that. The cars were absolutely, there was plenty of other cars that got checked for other things as well. So it wasn't just like, oh, they decided to suddenly check the cars for, what's it called? For, the plank, like. Because I did see some people like, oh, well, of course it's Lewis. And of course, like, what other reason could it be? And it's like implying, racist kind of stuff. And I'm just like, all right, it's not. They're checking this stuff for every race. Maybe it's different cars. Maybe it's different things. But everyone's getting scrutinized for something. You just might not get the plank checked every race. You might get the fuel sample. I mean, remember, Vettel had the fuel sample thing. And they were like, well, the argument there was that I think it was during what happened that weekend where he didn't have enough fuel in his car. I think something happened that weekend too. And like the argument could have been they didn't put enough fuel in the car to begin with because, again, a testing situation, whatever it was. And it's like, well, you can always make an excuse for something, right? But if the regulation is pretty cut and dry, then how are we supposed to not follow that, right? How are you not supposed to just say, well, the rule was broken? Yeah, it's unfortunate that it was you know, Lewis. It's unfortunate that it was Charles, but you know, I would love that. I would love that if it was, you know, the Red Bull. I would love that it was Matt, if it was Max's car, but it wasn't, and they did check his car for that too, right? So, yeah. I don't know. I know there's a whole other kind of road you want to go down with this story too. So I don't want to add too much to this.
I was just going to say though, also the onus does go on Mercedes, and I will say why, which is why I'm kind of torn between all this. Toto Wolff has long had this sort of militaristic approach to how he runs Mercedes. And yeah. He has said on record many times that he isn't above cleaning a bathroom, that he isn't above checking those things to make sure that everything is where it's supposed to be, that everything is clean, that, you know, he talks to the custodial staff the same way he talks to his drivers. I want everything to be perfect. So for Mercedes to allow something like that to the ride height to go unchecked, either if it was unchecked or if something that was just overlooked or whatever it was, those are those little details that matter. You know, and we remember Michael Schumacher, his disqualification in the Belgian Grand Prix. I mean, that blew open the championship again. And so there are implications to not making sure that the devil is in the detail. So I will put that on Mercedes and say that, you know, it could have just been a mistake, but Toto Wolff's teams don't make mistakes. And that's the problem they've had this season, especially this season. They continue to make mistakes. And it's like, how many times can they fail Lewis in one season? A lot, apparently. Of course, Lewis didn't do himself any favors in Qatar, but this was preventable. They had the car, they had the pace. Just lift the car a little bit more and you're fine. And those are the things too. You have the different engineers walking around and looking at other cars, and you know what they're looking for. They know what they're looking for. So did they see something on another car that maybe, you know, that like Red Bull's ride height, and not think, okay, well, maybe we should raise ours.
So yeah. I'm not sure that's how you're operating, right? Like, oh, well, they did this, so I'm going to do this. Like, I don't. Right.
Right. But it like, is that detail oriented kind of like OCD mentality that Toto Wolff has. So that's kind of why I'm saying, like, he is known for being this, you know, OCD guy, and then running his team a certain way. For something like this to just, you know, them not to realize this is just very uncharacteristic of Mercedes. But, you know, this has kind of been the year of uncharacteristic behavior for Mercedes.
It's been an uncharacteristic year for you know, well, I don't say uncharacteristic for Ferrari too, because they've been making this a characteristic. But yeah, I think, you know, you definitely have, I think you definitely have questions, right? You want to like, how does this happen? Of course, there's also the sprint race situation that you mentioned. Like, well, if these teams could actually collect some damn data, you know, more than one practice session. But I'll tell you this too, there was a, and I haven't really called anyone out yet on this, but there's engineers that were crying, oh, well, how are they supposed to build a car, or how are they supposed to set up a car with less data? They only had one practice session. And I mean, these are the same, you know, Twitter engineers, whatever. And some of them are actual, you know, engineers that were saying, oh, well, you don't need FP3 anyway, or you don't need all this practice anyway. Well, now suddenly it's, oh man, we need the practice. Well, which is it? Do you need the practice? Or do you not need the practice? Like, what, you know, what, which one are we going to have here? And, so I'm, you know, I don't know. I'm a little torn. I'm a little torn on how I feel about it, because I just think that, you know, there's so much confusion almost as to what can be done or what they should be doing. You know, you've got the same people that want, you know, more spectacle are also saying, you know, we shouldn't be changing rules for better racing or whatever. Like, the rules shouldn't be, which as a whole, I guess, has all other implications for certain fan base. But yeah, I don't know. I just think there's so much nuance, and like we'll never be able to really figure out all that nuance without really like figuring out where. And this goes back to something we've talked about for so many times on the show. What are they actually trying to do? Is it trying to be better racing, or are you just trying to sell tickets? Like, obviously you want to sell tickets, but are you focusing on the racing, or are you focusing on the spectacle?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think what this does is obviously Brazil is a big race to Lewis Hamilton. I think this says to the Brazilians, okay, we need to go support our dude. You know, he needs to win a race. Let's go and try and mess things up. So I don't know, maybe I don't think it is to sell more tickets. I don't think it is to get more people to tune into races, but the drama certainly helps because now there's drama for that P2 position. And whereas people said with the way that Sergio was driving and finishing, he was nowhere on the level of Lewis. And now we know what Lewis can do. And now Sergio has increased the gap after this race. So I think this could maybe be another battle that comes down to the wire. But I don't know. Mercedes needs to figure it out. I would say the same thing about Ferrari too. It seems like they're just still a very disjointed organization. What are your thoughts on Ferrari? I know you're a big Ferrari guy.
In terms of what?
In terms of the direction that they're going, it seems like Carlos is driving better, in my opinion. And Charles kind of makes the mistakes. He's the one that's kind of like, you know, not really doing anything. He's sputtering.
I don't know. You know, it's like, it's such a weird conversation, I think, to have, because to say that Charles is not more talented than Carlos would be unfair to Charles, but then to not recognize that Carlos is not a terrible driver would also be kind of unfair to Carlos. Obviously there's a lot more political type stuff that is going on behind the scenes, right? Like Carlos and his sponsors, and he's definitely more vocal on the radio back to the engineers. He doesn't mind pushing back where, you know, Charles, it's like, we're finally hearing him say things back a little bit more. Like he did, you know, this week he said, why did we switch? He's like, he didn't ask the question. He just kind of said, not sure why we switched. We're going to talk about this later. And I'm like, that's great, you know, to hear him do that. But at the same time, it's almost like, all right, cool. It's the end of the season and this championship is nowhere near your grasp. Why are you pushing back now? And, you know, why didn't you push back last season? Why didn't you push back earlier this year? Like, that's kind of where I go with it. And I think being vocal is obviously an important part of being a driver, right? You have to give feedback to your, you know, engineers and your team. I'm sure Charles is doing that, you know, after the races. I'm sure he's doing it behind closed doors. He seems to be, you know, kind of the Ferrari man through and through. And he kind of seems to be more, towing party line, so to speak, whereas Carlos is like, whatever, I'm probably going to be out of here anyway. I'm not going to be here that much longer. I'm going to do what I can do to be the best driver I can be. I don't know if any of that is accurate, right? I'm admitting that it is all speculative. That's highly speculative. I'm slightly scratching my head because it definitely feels like, what the heck, guys? Like, what are we doing here? Why are we not making strides? And, you know, with Vasseur, I was hoping some things would change. Now, granted, I also understand it's the first year, right? Like, we can't expect absolute overhaul, but I would really love to see him, you know, kind of take a little more control. I don't know. Again, I don't know. We don't know what's going on behind closed doors. So it's very difficult to say he's not taking control, or it's unfair to say he's not taking control of the situation. It does to me prove that there's a lot more behind the scenes that isn't happening. There's either some sort of process or you know, politics type thing happening at Ferrari that is just not allowing them to make these decisions. Yeah. And or allowing them to progress. But yeah, I'm not very confident over the next 2 years that it's going to be a turnaround, like, and which is also pretty sad in and of itself, right? Like, it's, I think a lot of us that watch the sport are like, okay, well, it's going to be Red Bull domination for at least another 2 years, yeah, right, before anything changes, which again, Mercedes did that too. And so I'm not taking away from, hey, they're doing a good job, they're building a great car, they absolutely deserve to, you know, keep crushing it. It's just, it's, I think the realization of it really sucks.
Yeah.
You know, and I wish my team was able to do more and kind of compete. It was nice to have that, you know, in 22, it was nice to have that, but now you're like, okay, we could be in this long, it could be a 4+ year where we don't see any strong competition to Red Bull. Like, that's, to me, that's what sucks. And I'm talking specifically about Ferrari, not even just the sport in general, because there's that whole conversation as well. But yeah, it's poop.
But I will say this about the juxtaposition between Red Bull and Mercedes is that when Mercedes was dominating, other teams still won. They got a win in here and there. And it wasn't just as cut and dry as, okay, well, we know Max is going to win, so whatever. Other teams still won. And so
you still had, like, from 2014 to 2016, Mercedes won like 86% of the races.
Yeah. I mean, definitely. But there were still, like, you know, maybe Lewis would go on a 5-race heater and then lose one. So every couple of races, maybe they would have another person winning. So it wasn't like we could be guaranteed that we're going to have 10 consecutive races with a single winner. It was, I don't know, I guess that's the difference between Red Bull and Mercedes. But again, that's not Red Bull's fault.
No, they've figured it out, right? We can't sit here and blame them. I'm adamantly against the folks that are like, illegal this, illegal floor, like, get over it. They figured it out clearly. If something was illegal, you can't tell me that the other teams would not be rising up. Like, there's, you just can't, you know? So. Yeah.
Well, look at all the times that Checo put the car up in the air for people to actually see it. So,
yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
There's nothing. And that's why Christian Horner kept saying, I'm not worried if people take our designs, because they're going to be irrelevant in a couple of races anyway. He wasn't wrong with that. But I think the only argument people are making right now is kind of meh right now, but is that Red Bull potentially had an illegal car for 2 years because of the overspend on the cap. And how much of that money actually went into R&D to develop cars or to develop parts that maybe they shouldn't have had. So that's this is such a massive hypothetical. We don't know and we'll never know. So why are we talking about it?
Yeah.
And so it's just a weird thing. It's like, everyone's always trying to, like, call people. Anytime a team is on a heater, it's like, oh, you're cheating. You're this, you're that. It's like, I don't know how F1 can mitigate this. I don't think they can. And again, like everybody keeps saying, it's not fair to punish Red Bull. They cracked the code. They figured it out. It's other teams' job to figure out how to compete against them. Mm-hmm. So I think that maybe is why people, especially Mercedes fans, were so annoyed at what happened with the disqualification, because for the first time we actually saw a car give it to Max. We actually saw a car able to compete throughout that last lap. And we haven't really seen that all season. I mean, he's been leading by like 20 something seconds in races. So
yeah, I mean, let's not be race.
That he was actually really challenged. So what are your thoughts?
No, I mean, listen, I was the first one. I'll be the first to admit that absolutely cheering for Lewis to make a comeback. And, you know, every time I'm hearing Max complain about the brakes, I'm like, oh my God, could this be, the, you know, could this be the race where he finally, you know, bends it or something? Yeah. I'll be the first one to admit, but, you know, I think brake issue aside, which probably had to do with the ride height for the record. You know, brake issue aside, he still came from sixth.
And
had no issue getting that car right back up, you know, into first place. So, you know, at the end of the day, yeah, Lewis or somebody might have pushed him a little bit, right? In this case, it was Lewis. But, like, let's not be delusional for one second and think that Lewis or anybody had, like, a and that's actually kind of – that's the, I don't want to say problem, but that's the issue, right? Is, like, we didn't think for one second that Lando was going to hold on to that lead. We didn't think for one second that Charles was going to take that pole position and do anything with it. Like, no one in their right mind thought that over the course of that race, you know, it was going to be anything but Max at the top. And yeah, you know, I don't know. I don't know. I don't know anymore because I, you know, in watching it, you just kind of like, we've kind of just come to accept that it is, it's their domination. They're here. It's not going anywhere. And I think the question that we may want to discuss or answer, or we probably don't have an answer for it, but the question that we would probably want to discuss a little more is what does F1 do? They shouldn't punish or penalize Red Bull, right? Because they're not really doing anything wrong. Unless, of course, they are doing something wrong. But let's just say they're not doing anything wrong. You can't penalize a team for being successful and figuring it out. But what, you know, how do they – I think this is the best question is, like, how does F1 – how do they make people care? You know, how do you get people to give a shit about, you know, your sport – your series when the number one team is never questioned? Like, nobody, you know, I was thinking back, I was like, okay, who, and I watch NFL football, right? Or I watch, you know, Champions League or whatever. Do you often remember who the second place person was? No, not really. Like, unless the game was memorable, right? In the case of 2021, the finale at Abu Dhabi. Yeah, of course, I remember that Lewis finished second because it was so memorable. But, how, I mean, can you name who was second place in, you know, let's keep going back in even F1 history, but any sport. Like, do you remember who came in second place in the NFL? Like, who lost the Super Bowl, you know, last year? Who lost Super Bowl the year before? Who, you know, I don't know that I can, and I watch the sport. Like, I enjoy those sports, and I don't think I can tell you who won them. Now, granted, I know there are people that can, but, like, I don't know. It doesn't matter, right? Because at the end of the day, they didn't win. So what did they do? Now, F1 is a little bit different because constructors and all that kind of stuff matters, but no one really cares. So that's the issue that I think Formula One needs to figure out is, like, where do we get people? How do we get people to continue caring about this when there is no competition? I mean, we have another, what, four races that we have to watch, and fans are paying money to go see, where the outcome, I don't want to say doesn't matter, but where the outcome to a casual truly doesn't matter. Yeah. If you're a casual fan, unless you're a fan of Mercedes or Ferrari or McLaren at this point of the year, the race kind of doesn't really matter. It's everything is like, okay, whatever.
Yeah. And there are Williams fans. There are AlphaTauri fans. I mean, AlphaTauri just got that massive, Alpine just got that massive backing from Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce. And it's just, that is what people are talking about right now in America. I mean, it's all over NFL, ESPN, everybody's talking about that. And so, you know, Alpine's going to get a massive boost because people are going to say, oh, well, you know, Kelsey, Mahomes, Ryan Reynolds, et cetera, all these investors are behind it. Well, that's really cool. And you're having the crossovers happen. I mean, I think on NFL Instagram, they had, and Twitter, they had that video that that they shot of both the drivers wearing their jerseys. So that's everywhere right now. And so that's that marketing. So maybe that has some implications there. Maybe more people are interested. I mean, we saw Rory McIlroy with them all weekend. So there are, I think, more tentacles getting into the sport that could potentially keep more and more people interested. But I don't know how other teams are able to capitalize off of that, because you don't exactly see these athletes hooking themselves into Haas, for example.
No, and, but also remember that, like, go ahead, finish your statement first.
Oh, no, I was done.
No, I was going to say, just remember, those things are also fleeting, right? So,
yeah. Cool. Right, but it's capitalizing on it while it's happening.
Well, I'm going to push this out. Here's a thought for you. The Pat Mahomes, Travis Kelce thing, they had already invested. This wasn't new money that came in, I don't believe. If I recall correctly, when Ryan Reynolds' money came in with the Capital, Redbird Capital, whoever it was them plus Ryan Reynolds, investment and whatnot. I believe that this money was already there. So this isn't actually new money. It almost sounds like more of, oh, we've got to kind of, we need a new marketing spin for it. What can we do? Mm-hmm. Oh, these guys were also involved because they're involved in the Capital group that was already there. So I just wonder if, again, I don't know for a fact, but I'm saying I wonder if F1 realized, well, wait a minute, we need to capitalize because we are kind of losing some interest. Losing interest now, not losing interest as a whole, just because the season's kind of waning. And so I wonder if that was strategic in the fact that, well, let's now put all these celebrity names, let's attach all these. It doesn't hurt that Travis Kelce is dating Miss Taylor Swift, and we can attach him to it. I mean, you saw it.
Alpine, they tracked the Taylor Swift song to that.
They used the Taylor Swift song.
Yeah.
For that. Like, okay, cool. With a Kelce jersey on. Like, that's kind of ironic that they're suddenly doing, stuff like that. So, yeah, I wonder how they're looking at it.
Aston Martin did that too at the beginning of the season. They played with that when there were the rumors of Fernando Alonso. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, Taylor Swift has kind of become a static staple in Formula One in some weird way. I mean, even at COTA, they have the friendship bracelets. So, that was in motion well before the Kelce Swift relationship happened. So, I mean, I think that is just pop culture making its way into sport, because they know that this is. And also, when you think about how many more women are starting to watch the NFL because of Travis Kelce, suddenly you have this army of millions of Taylor Swift followers saying, "I'm watching the Taylor Swift game, and it's the Chiefs on TV." So maybe that's what F1 is going for right now. Let's see how many more celebrities we can get involved in this. But I don't know. Again, when you have the result, I mean, that the Chiefs aren't going to win every week. I mean, they could win every week, but they've already lost one. So that there's still some excitement there, and they haven't been beating their opponents by like double digits. It's kind of come to the wire in a lot of games. So there's still some competition there. And when you've got a sport like Formula One, where you've got one team that's absolutely eviscerating the competition. I mean, seriously, when you take the points that Sergio Perez has contributed to Red Bull's Constructors Championship, Red Bull would still win.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that is how dominant Max has been. You can't change that right now. So I don't know where the games are coming from. I don't know what they're trying to do with this. I don't see it having the same attraction as the Taylor Swift thing is having on the NFL.
No,
I respect
no,
them I, trying to piggyback off of it, but it's not going to have the same impact. So I don't know.
I think if anything, Vegas is kind of a saving grace this year.
Yeah.
Because they're definitely going to get there's going to be a lot of eyeballs regardless on that race, right? Or at least on the spectacle of the weekend, regardless. Doesn't matter what you think about it. You could think that it's a crappy track. You could think that it's a crappy race, you know, overall, but regardless, it's going to be, you know, it's highly anticipated. It's going to be a massive spectacle. I think the timing is going to be very interesting. I think that the fact that you're having a race at 1 o'clock Eastern in the morning, for a race that's in your own home country is going to be kind of, I don't want to say detrimental. I'm really curious to see how that does. Cause it's not like you're watching Australia, right? It's not like you're watching the Japan race and it just happens to be at 1 o'clock your time. You're watching a race that's in your own country. I mean, we don't even watch Pac-12 football at 1 o'clock in the morning, right? At least the games. You watch it if it has already begun, but you're not like turning it on at 1 o'clock. It's already on.
But this game, it starts at 10 local time in Vegas. So it's already going to be competing with college football. So again, with the Sunday timing, Saturday timing, I'm not quite sure. I mean, I know it's Vegas. They want people out partying, but, I just don't know that was the move. I think maybe it still should have been on a Sunday and then have people party into Monday, but that's just me. I don't see how competing with that, because at least on Sunday, you know that Sunday night football would be over by the time the race started. There are football fans that will not turn off college football, even if it is Pac-12 after dark, to watch a Formula One race, especially if they're just not into the sport that much. So if you want to get the eyes on it, but people are still, I mean, I remember a while ago when Succession was on, and Succession would immediately follow Sunday night football. And everybody would just watch Succession. That was a thing to do. So maybe this race could have been that thing that people still want to watch TV. They're still excited. Maybe their team won and they turn on the race. So part of me kind of hopes that for the sake of viewership, maybe we'll see what happens, but that they do move it to Sunday so that they're not competing with the college football and NFL. But we'll see what happens.
I want to know what happens with this, with this past race at COTA, you know, with the viewership. Another, you know, because getting later into the F1 season, now you're competing with American football. And like, I didn't see what the numbers were for, was it Qatar? Was it, what was the race before last? Was it Qatar, right? That was 2 weeks ago. Oh my God, I'm getting so like, I can't even remember anymore.
Disoriented.
I'm getting the calendar is like all screwy in my head. So you had Qatar during, you know, the NFL season, obviously, but did that, I didn't see what the numbers look like. I know they weren't great. I just don't remember if they were as low as I thought they were going. Cause I did early on in that week, I was like, I think this is going to be the lowest watched of the season. I don't know if it was, and I don't know if it will be, because you do have like those late races and whatnot. I think we could be getting back into territory with, you know, now we've got Mexico next week. Mexico was epically boring last year.
So bad.
Sao Paulo in Brazil could be good. So I always love that race. I love that track. So that's like, that might be decent. But if you're looking at the rest of the season, Abu Dhabi's going to mean nothing. So they're all going to be nothing in terms of like first place. So you have to care about the second place, and you're going to compete with a potentially epic, even more epically boring Mexico race, a race in Brazil that might be exciting, a weirdly timed but potentially amazing spectacle of Vegas. And then you're going to have your finisher, which is Thanksgiving weekend here in the United States. So I'm just curious because, you know, we know they're going after the US market and like the Americas. And I'm just really, I want to see how well they think they can compete, especially against the NFL.
The US Grand Prix, they were still competing with the NFL. Games were going on while the race was happening, while quali was happening, college, and the sprint race. So I think F1 needs to get serious also about that and say that we are still trying to expand in America while also competing against sports that are American pastimes. They're in the fabric of Americana, and we're trying to disrupt that. So I don't know what they need to do. I don't have the answers, but honestly, if any of our listeners have any ideas, let us know. Are there people in marketing? Like, what would you do if you were in marketing? It's basically, I know you're in marketing. So
yeah.
The fact that you don't even have answers, it's like,
it's not about not having answers. I think it's just, there's so much nuance and for us to answer a lot of these questions would require us to have more information or more data on like what is F1 actually doing, right? Like, what are they trying to do? If it's just a matter of like, we're going to compete and we're going to, you know, we know people aren't going to watch, or we know that people aren't going to, then okay. I mean, fine. You have to run your series. I also get that, right? Like, you've got to do your thing. You can't necessarily just cave because, oh, there's another series or there's another sport going on. Like, it is what it is. People that watch F1 are motorsport fans. They're different than, they're going to be different than, NFL fans, or they're going to be different than soccer, football fans. Like, it's a different crowd, right? But at what point are you like, how do we make this work? And that's, I'm just like, I just get more and more confused as to how they make it work without just going all in on like spectacle and losing racing.
At the TV, on the TVs in the the SI tent.
The hospitality tents and stuff.
Okay, yeah. Red Bull's hospitality. They had football games on, which I thought was brilliant. You were seeing people like posting videos and things like of what they were watching while also watching the race. And so I thought that was kind of nice, but I mean, again, the race is like 2 hours. So, and that goes by super quick. So I don't know. We talk about that maybe is another piece of the spectacle.
I also, do they do more like actual partnerships?
Yeah.
With other sports. And what do those partnerships look like? Like, it's got to be something more than just like, oh, we're going to wear NFL style jerseys and like promote it. Like, I don't know. That's not.
Yeah. That's, we're going to get the really Dallas Cowboys fancy cheerleaders and the Houston Texans cheerleaders to come out. And I mean, again, like that maybe is important to some American fans, but I mean, people from other countries who are coming, they don't give a shit. They don't care. So.
I don't know what the full expectation is, for them. And I think even knowing that is difficult enough, right? Like,
right.
Yeah. It's tough. We talk about this a lot. Crossroads. We're at a point where, you know, does Formula One really want this market? Do they really want to, you know, infiltrate this market? Because it's going to take a lot, right? Any market, first of all, I'm not just talking about the Americas like it's some, you know, unicorn. There's
anomaly.
Anything. Like, you go to China, you're going to have to fight with things. You go to Africa, you're going to have, like, there's no magic pill for all of these. It's just a matter of like, how far are you willing to go to actually get what you're looking for? And I don't know. I think the spectacle piece is odd. And, you know, when people don't understand what's going on, I'm not saying this should change the rules. There was clearly rules violations, so I'm not taking that away. But when people just don't know what's going on or understand things fully, you have an education problem. And that's kind of where we're at, is like, there's clearly an education issue. People don't understand it. Like, maybe help them understand more, give them more opportunities, or give them more ways to understand the sport. Like, that's important. That, to me, that's important. And that's something that like no one really talks about enough. But yeah, anyway.
We don't know. We don't know what's going on with this sport. We love this sport, but there are some things that again, we don't have the answers. It's too nuanced, but hopefully, I don't know, hopefully F1 figures it out, because I would hate to see F1 start to lose its, American fans start to lose their interest in F1. I would hate to see really anyone from any other country lose their interest, because we've seen what the sport has evolved into, and it's actually become really cool. It's become really unique in a way that, you know, everybody feels like, even if you're a content creator, a random fan, you feel like you're a part of something. You feel like you're part of a community, and it is a really cool thing. But yeah, there's just a lot of gatekeeping, so to speak, I think. And there's also a lot of problems, a lot of challenges. So yeah, we'll see what happens. Who knows? Vegas will be interesting, but.
Vegas will be, you know, Vegas, and we talked about this as well earlier in the season, but Vegas is, or has got the, like, they've been promoting Vegas, talking about Vegas like all season long, right? Yeah. Miami kind of already lost its shine. You've got, you know, COTA's trying to keep up because, you know, they've been around for 11 years and they've already got to like change things up, and they were trying to do different things this year, but I don't know that it works. I don't know that it works for COTA. Like, COTA's a racer's track for the most part. Like, it's a good race. It's a good track. It's a, you know, people go there because they want to watch the damn race. But you can't water it down either. Like, that's a huge aspect of this, is like, don't just water down the good stuff that works, you know, just because you suddenly, you know, think you have to, and for the sake of just watering it down, like, that would suck.
Yeah, I agree. Well, this has been a unique conversation. I wish that our episodes didn't have to revolve around the constant news cycle that is F1, but, you know, I like it when we get into the nuance of the sport, but I mean, this is just kind of where we're at right now. So I don't know, the next couple episodes are hopefully going to be more, I think, entertaining in terms of those nuances, let's talk about what's going on next season, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. But yeah, if F1 continues at the shit show, I don't know. I just don't know how much more content creators can possibly say. Like, that hasn't already been said. So it's, I don't know. If we're kind of like, we post an episode 1 week and then we take 2 weeks off, it's literally because there's nothing to talk about.
Yeah. I mean, we get into a spot for us specifically where a lot of it is revolving around what is actually happening within the FIA or whatnot. And it tends to be ironically negative, because of just the nature of what it is. Like, even this episode, you know, where we're sitting here and we're kind of affected by the fact that, again, it's a rule, it's a regulation, it's fine, but it's also one that potentially happened because of the desire for spectacle. So we added a sprint, which in reality may have actually not sold more tickets, which was actually a real factor. They talked about that. Mm-hmm. And, but it could have affected cars performance and how they tested. Right. So, like, in the desire for spectacle, you may have actually ruined certain aspects of the race, right? So, yeah, I don't know. It's just really tough.
Well, at least for this race, there wasn't a massive collision. At least Logan Sargeant got his first point on U.S. soil.
Yep.
Eagles were flying. We had fireworks. It was awesome. Not at the expense of Lewis and Charles, of course, but I mean, he still got his first point, so that's good for him going into this next, I think, round with Williams. I think they still want to see what he can do, but I think also at this stage, who are they going to sign to replace him? You know what I mean? So that was a positive from the weekend. I will say that was a positive. I think we need to celebrate what we can. The little details. I'm fine with that. Yeah, exactly.
I'm fine with that.
All right, Vincenzo, where can people find you on social media?
hit me on the tweets or X, whatever it's called, at Vincenzo Landino. I'm doing most of my stuff there now, and I'll be bringing back some other content, but for now it's just the Twitter.
The Xer. Whatever it's called now. And you guys can find me on both Instagram, Twitter, Twixer, Twatter, whatever, at the VF Castro.
I'm going to start calling it Twatter just for you.
I mean, I think it should have always been called Twatter. I even mentioned Elon last year saying, please call it Twatter. Nothing ever happened. Wonder why.
Wow. He should have listened to you.
Exactly. All right, guys, we will catch you. I won't say next episode or next week because we don't know. We ebb and flow with the news, but we will talk to you guys on the next one. Bye.
Ciao.
Thank you so much for tuning into the VF1 show. If you liked it, please don't forget to hit the subscribe button. And for previews of next week's show, follow us on Instagram and Twitter at the VF Castro and Vincenzo Landino.